Morning, everyone. My name is Neville Miller. Thanks to Cameron a little bit for introducing some of the earlier work that myself and colleagues were involved on. I won't be talking today about that, but today I'm going to talk about the influence of winter cover crops on nitrous oxide emissions from Midwest row crops. Just a brief question and overview. Do cover crops affect N2 emissions when we incorporate them into our rotation? Here we're talking about winter cover crops between annual cover crops. We know nitrous oxide is the largest contributor to the greenhouse gas burden of cropping systems in the U.S. There are relatively limited emissions data of N2O from cover crop systems, although that's increasing all the time. The inclusion of a winter cover crop can be seen as effectively perennializing annual crop systems throughout the year, and could that help reduce nutrient runoff, soil erosion? Could it also provide climate stabilization through soil carbon storage, increased carbon inputs into the soil? Perhaps it even could mitigate N2O emissions, and this research was attempting to see if that is the case. Where are we? We're the KBS LTER, the Kellogg Biological Station. It's part of a network of LTER sites across the U.S. We're in southwest Michigan, just between Kalamazoo and Battle Creek. And this is Gull Lake. This is the KBS station. And here's the field site I'll be talking about on the next slide. The site itself, around KBS, about 1,600 hectares of cropping systems, successional communities, small lakes. You can read a little bit about the area there, the topography. Around about a meter of precipitation each year, half of which falls as snow, around about 10 Celsius mean annual temperature. Some moderate fertility loam soils we're working on. So the actual experiment we're working on is part of the GLBRC, the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, Biofield Cropping System Experiment, the BCSE. In total, there are 10 treatments, 5 blocks, from which we are measuring from 3 treatments and 4 blocks. So here, you can see here, we're measuring from these 3 treatments here, all with cover crops, continuous corn, CC, corn soybean, CS, and soybean corn, so a reverse of the corn soybean, SC. And those are the 3 treatments I'll talk about today. There are many other treatments, but these are the ones I'll focus on. So with regards to the field management over these 3 years, we'll be looking at 2014, 2015, and 2016. I will see that the continuous corn has 3 happy years of corn. The corn soybean has corn in 2014 and 2016, and soybean in between. And again, the soybean corn, soybean in 2014 and 16, and corn in between. In each of these cover crop treatments, we established a no-cover microplot, a small microplot within each of these treatments in each year. The cover crops is a mix of cereal rye and winter pea planted in late October, harvested and removed in the case of the no-cover crops in late May. The management in all these corn systems is the same. I'll point that out first of all. It's a split application of 1917-0 at planting, roughly 33 kilograms. And 4 to 6 weeks later, we knife in some urea ammonium nitrate at the level of about 137 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And over these 3 years, 2014 to 2016, we've sampled over 50 times from all these sites in both the no-cover microplot and the cover crop, if you like, control. Typically, we do that weekly, bi-weekly during the growing season, so the 6 months of the growing season. Then off-season during the winter time, we do that at least monthly. Just some brief revision about the way we do this. We're using the static chamber approach with syringes and needles. We place the lid on the chamber. We extract the samples 4 times in the course of an hour. We take that back to our auto analyzer in the lab. And what we're looking for here is obviously the change in concentration over time of the N2O. Normally we use a linear fit. Sometimes we need to use a different fit based on the data. So this is the meat of the results here, and I'll take a little time to try to go through it for you. So on the left-hand panels here, we have the 3 years from early 2014 to middle summer 2016. We have the continuous corn here, the corn soybean here, and the soybean corn here. And hopefully I've helped you identify the crop in each year with these little icons here. So these are the daily emissions on this side over the 3 years. These are the equivalent, if you like, cumulative emissions over the growing season from early April all the way through to late October, November. The solid lines are where the cover crop is present. The dashed lines are where the cover crop is absent. Again, daily emissions on this side and cumulative emissions on that side. And I didn't include error bars here for clarity. In general, the take-home message is while there are differences on certain days which manifest themselves in larger emissions, for instance, here over the course of the growing period, with the error bars included, trust me on this, there's really not a lot of difference you can see between all 3 cropping rotations in all 3 years. I'll maybe explore that a little bit later in one of my last slides. So what I'll do here is just identify one particular year. I could have done others, but here I'm going to sort of break down this year. It's a corn year in the corn-soybean rotation, and just see what sort of management impacts the N2O emissions. So yeah, you can see here, this is the system here, the corn-soybean in 2016. It's a corn year. These arrows here indicate where we've actually terminated the cover crop in the cover crop treatments. There's obviously no cover in the no-cover treatments. So around about the end of May, early June, we're both terminating the cover crop, and then we're planting the corn. And recall, with the corn, there's also a small starter amount of fertilizer, about 33 kilograms of nitrogen. There is some increase here associated with this land disturbance in the planting and potentially also the N inputs here. You can see our later sampling here goes back down towards more of a background level. Then we apply the side dress fertilizer, the 133 kilograms of nitrogen there, with the UAN application. Maybe not surprisingly, you get a spike in the N2 emissions in both the cover and the no cover. Again, pretty quickly coming back down to what you'd consider near to a background level of nitrous oxide emissions. And here I've depicted four pretty heavy rainfall events, more or less the same equidistant apart, 5, 6, 7 days apart, in mid to late July. And whereas maybe if those didn't occur, you would possibly see a tailing off of the N2 emissions. What this seems to have done here is it stimulated nitrogen in the soil from the fertilizer application to then kind of have a second peak later in the season, whereas if that rain wasn't there, that peak may not have occurred. So here's really a summary of the results. These are the cumulative emissions, the total emissions over that growing period between early April and late October each year. Here we've got the 3 years, 2014, 2015, and 2016. Here we have the corn. The orange bars are the corn, continuous corn, in 2014, 2015, and 2016. The green bars are the corn, soybean corn. So here's a corn year, here's a soybean year, here's a corn year. And in the blue bars, we've got soybean, corn, soybean. So soybean in 2014, corn in 2015, and soybean in 2016. The hashed bars represent the lack of cover, and the solid bars represent where there is cover. And the error bars here, I've included them deliberately to show that although there are some differences in some years, there's a trend, those trends aren't consistent, and that, as far as we know from the analysis we've done so far, there's no statistical significance between them. You can talk about the total emissions here. Around about some of these corn years, we're talking about 3 kilograms of nitrous oxide nitrogen per hectare over the growing season, which is relatively high, somewhat higher than some of our other systems. But when you think you're applying, in some cases, 170 kilograms of nitrogen, maybe with a little in the cover crop systems, a little bit of N from the cover crop itself, you're talking emission factors about 1 to 1.5%, which is consistent with where we've been in the past. So yeah, just some broad general conclusions. At least in our experiments with our crops, in our cover crops, we did not consistently or significantly affect nitrous oxide emissions. You can view that as a positive or a negative. I think I'd view that more as a positive, but it's good in that the cover crops obviously confer other benefits, and with their inclusion, we're not really increasing the nitrous oxide emission load of that rotation. Again, possibly not surprisingly, we saw that the highest emissions were in corn versus the soybean because of the N fertilizer input, irrespective of the presence of cover crops or not. And again, not uncommon to see this. The highest flux has occurred following the N fertilization events, both the starter fertilizer and also the side dress. Following soil disturbance, obviously we're planting annual crops and also we're terminating the cover crops. And again, I showed you the example where rainfall events really also increased the nitrous oxide emissions from these systems. So with that, I'll leave you with the acknowledgements and funding and presumably have some time for questions. Thank you very much. The total emissions, the cumulative emissions I showed you, just included the growing crop season. Some of those graphs, it wasn't maybe easy to see, but during the winter season, when we measured them from November, December, January, February, the emissions, although we didn't measure very, very frequently, there was no evidence that there was any peaks during the winter period of time. And in fact, we've got some automated chamber systems we've looked at where we show that winter emissions in our systems are very low, a relatively small percentage of the total annual emissions. So for this purposes, I left them out. We could, of course, include them, but they were very consistent and they wouldn't make much difference to the overall magnitude.
What kind of cover crop did you have?
That was Austrian winter pea and a cereal rye is a mix together, planted in late October. Yes, sir.
So did your cover crops change your nitrate concentration? And how much cover crop did you
have? Yeah, good questions. We've got some measurements of soil nitrogen, which I can look at more in detail. In general, with other cover crop experiments, not this one's, we found that they have decreased it at the beginning of the season. With regards to biomass, a lot of these cover crops, particularly the winter pea, didn't establish very well. So our total, say, harvest of cover crop would maybe not be much more than, say, a megagram or a ton in the mix. So not a large amount, which again may feed into the potential lack of differences between the actual emissions, because there wasn't a huge amount of biomass incorporated with the cover crop presence. In other systems, that's different, but in this system, that was the case. Yes, sir? Why would that occur? What would be the theory behind that?
Yeah,
in our system, you could imagine in theory that a cover crop planted in late October would be able to mop up any residual nitrogen, nitrate left after, say, the corn crop the previous year. It would maybe retain that in its roots and its shoots over the winter season. And then that nitrogen, once the cover crop is terminated, could effectively be a better provider of nitrogen through the corn growing season. So it would be instead of a single dose of a large amount of N input, it might help provide a slower release of nitrogen into the system, which may be better if there's more crop N uptake, then there's less available, for instance, nitrous oxide emissions. In our case, though, as you maybe saw, it wasn't set up to look at reducing N fertilizer rate based on cover crop N. We applied the same amount of fertilizer to all systems in the corn, irrespective of if there was a presence or absence of cover crops. So again, that may have masked any and to a mitigation potential of the actual cover crop practice itself. Just to hopefully make that clear. Yes, sir. Oh,
sorry. Did the cover crops have any effect on the corn?
That is a good question. I am analyzing that data now. I can't answer that, but we'll definitely look into that. I can, actually, but don't hold me to that. For the data. But yeah, I mean, you may expect a bump. We'll look into that, whether it's statistical or not.
One final question. When you change the cropping sequence, like corn planting or certain regards, do you see any difference in the
influence? So, overall, over the 3 years, you mean? Well, I mean, in soybean years, there is a much reduced emissions because you're not fertilizing, or at least that's typically what we see. Although, obviously, N has been fixed to a reasonable degree to a large amount of N, but it's not manifested itself with with the same emissions as corn because of that kind of real pulse after the emission, you know, the N fertilizer is applied. You obviously don't see that with soybean because we're not applying fertilizer. Oh, over those 3 years? Well, I mean, when you have 2 years of soybean and 1 year of corn, and the opposite 2 years of corn, 1 year of soybean, over that 3 year period, you do see less in the soybean, corn, soybean, than the corn, soybean, corn. But these are only 3 years to show, you know, to illustrate the crop rotations we're using. There is more years of data, and I suspect if there's an equal number of corn, soybean in each of those rotations, you won't see a lot of difference over the course.
But the average emission between corn and soybean is
In those corn soybean rotations, if there's an equal number of years of each, yeah. I mean, corn emits more because of the fertilizer in that respect.